the EGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 439, recorded on September 21st, 2016. Edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and a 272nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am PJ Dozer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, as we get into the towards the fall season, a lot of stuff keeps dropping. I guess we'll start with what have you been playing with me. I played the second episode of the Batman Telltale game.
Oh, yeah? How was it?
You know, I can see why people aren't enchanted by the story, but I find it fascinating because it focuses on Bruce. And the thing is that at one part, it asks you, do you want to interrogate this person as Bruce or as Batman? And I decided to do it as Bruce.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so...
There is, like, a good section of the game that you can do Batman, though, right?
I mean, yeah, you can plan your attacks with, and this time you get to do it in concert with Catwoman. And one of the interesting things about this game is that it takes place in an alternate continuity. So they're able to do stuff that you wouldn't need to do. For example, it is possible to prevent Harvey Dent from becoming Two-Face, from what I understand. Well, for one thing, the penguin, Oswald Cobblepot, is a tall, lanky, Australian-accented dude, so it's kind of far away from what his usual depiction is.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually you imagine penguin being very penguin-like, and I liked how they explained it in the movie, the Batman movie with Michael Keaton. But that is interesting that they allow you to prevent Harvey Dent from becoming Two-Face. So that's interesting that they allow you to make your own story, it looks like.
The thing is that they give you a choice, either save Harvey Dent or save Catwoman. And if you just choose to save Harvey Dent, Catwoman gets shot and she never trusts you again. So I went with saving her because... why screw with canon? I don't care if Harvey Dent becomes Two-Face. He's supposed to become Two-Face, so let him become Two-Face. You know? But the thing revolves around the fact that the Waynes, Thomas and Martha, or at least Thomas, wasn't exactly law-abiding, and that's what the entire game revolves around. The fact that Bruce has to deal with the fact that his father might have been a mob boss, or at least a co-conspirator. So... we still don't know the full story yet because it's the second episode of 5. And a character has entered a scene that sort of reminds me of a combination of either Arkham Knight or the Scarecrow. And I'm leaning towards thinking it's the Scarecrow, but I could be wrong. Could be an entirely new character. But yeah, and the thing is that, you know, the strength of this is that, yeah, we don't have to deal with, you know... Bruce Wayne is a character unto himself, too, you know, and this deals with him dealing with the upper crust, you know, and I'm really enjoying seeing some of the things that he has to do, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I got NBA 2K17 yesterday as well, and I'm enjoying a lot of the changes, but I'm not enjoying the fact that it requires you to be online or else it cripples what you can do in the game. I'm also trying to do the expansion team, but I keep on coming up with weird bugs. Like, when I included a different expansion team, suddenly my team decided they would be wearing their uniforms instead of the ones that I created from scratch, you know? Mm. And the problem is you cannot save your stuff until you are into the game and where the relocate sign is, and I find that very strange, you know? And if you misspell anything... you can't change it, which is strange as well. So hopefully they'll fix that in a patch, because I'm really enjoying everything else about it. The My GM mode is really neat. The My Career is also okay. It's not as good as the My GM so far. I haven't tried anything else in it either.
Do you know exactly, what do you lose out on if you're not online? Can you, like, not access the My Career GM mode?
You can't get your original character, the one that you created. The save files are incompatible, and you get to do less stuff. And, you know, it irritates me because, you know what, I'm willing to bet you the hackers have already hacked the game and are playing it. And the only people you're affecting are the people who legally bought your game. The other thing is that, what is that noise? Anyway, that's kind of annoying. The game is still microtransaction heavy, but it's not as blatant as the previous game was. Yeah, Scott, that's you. What are you doing, Scott?
Nothing. I'm just sitting here.
Sounds like the ocean is near you.
There's like a fan that came on in the background of yours, and it's like cutting everything else out.
Oh, that was weird. Anyways, so what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing mostly the Trails in the Sky, and I played a little bit more of the Fallout 4 DLC, and I tweeted about it a little bit. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it doesn't have any real story, you know? It's like you want to kill the bandits, okay, go kill them, and then that's it. It's just like the Skyrim Brotherhood thing. You want to go kill the Brotherhood, okay, kill them.
Yeah, I've heard the complaints that it's not as deep as the Far Harbor one was.
Yeah, it's definitely not. So it's a little disappointing, and I'm feeling like I'm nearing the end of my desire to play Fallout 4. It's like I've experienced the game, and I'm ready for, like, you know, Civ 6 and other games. And
you know, it's a good thing that Bethesda said that was the last DLC they're going to be releasing for Fallout 4, so you're in luck.
Hopefully they've moved on to more interesting projects that I can get into, because I think I'm tired of this one.
Have you heard the controversy now cropping up with the PlayStation 4 version of Fallout 4, in that they said, you know what, we're never going to have, we're never going to have imported mods for you, and it's not going to happen for Skyrim either.
I'm not surprised at all. This is exactly what happened with Elder Scrolls, and, you know, the PlayStation Sony users get screwed again.
I don't understand what's going on there. I mean, with original Skyrim content, with the DLC, it was because of was it Skyrim? It was because of technical issues with the PS3.
Oh, I thought it was because Microsoft paid them to get Sony licensed.
No. It was actually, well, it was, but it was only supposed to be a month after. But the problem is that they had issues. The original Skyrim had issues on the PS3 to begin with, you know.
Right.
So it doesn't look like they're going to have the mods on Skyrim for PS4. You know, we're important mods. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And Bethesda's basically pointing the fingers at Sony on this.
It sounds like, I guess, Sony just used a bad operating system.
No, in this case, it has something to do with policy with PSN, I'm pretty sure. This time, it has nothing to do with with technical stuff. It has to do with Sony itself. And it sounds a little bit like EA with Steam, in which or Valve wants a cut of all DLC, you know, that sort of thing, which is why EA doesn't release anything on Steam until they have their complete edition, which has all the DLC that's ever been released in that single game.
Okay, I guess that makes more sense then. Yeah, it's... I don't know. I've been just sticking to PC, so I don't think I'll be getting Bethesda games on
PS4. Anything else? I'm pretty sure you've been playing Minecraft.
yeah, a little bit of Minecraft, yeah. Like I said, I'm almost done with Trails, and then I'll move on to another game and finish off the DLC for Fallout 4. I'll definitely have to nuke everything, the bandits. I'm just going to go get my orange annihilate them, irradiate the whole place.
So let me ask you a question. When you play Minecraft, is it solo or co-op mostly?
Co-op.
Okay.
I play on the server with other people.
Yeah.
And we build stuff and, so, and do UHCs and stuff.
So it's sort of like a community thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the more fun indie things I've been playing lately is Halcyon 6 Starbase Commander. Massive Damage. It's fun. It's like a light version of a Stellaris or like an Endless Beyond. You play as like a human race that has this mysterious base, and they only have access to like a fraction of it, and your job is to like expand and explore the base. Meanwhile, this alien race there's like several alien races, but one specifically wants to destroy you, and the others just sort of want to get the humans out of there so they can have it. And it's a little bit of a like diplomatic, a lot of space exploration and a lot of resource management. And it's interesting. Like the way they set up combat is it's like old school JRPG style combat, and you inflict status effects on the enemies, and then there are specific attacks that will remove that status effect but do more damage by exploiting it. And I really enjoy it. It's very circular the way, and in fact the entire game is very circular in the way it plays out.
That's cool. Anything else?
Yeah, and then I went back to BioShock. I got the collection.
I was thinking about getting BioShock the collection, but you know, a lot of people have been warning about, I believe, the PS4 version having some strange issues.
I'm sorry,
it's the PC version that's having strange issues.
Yeah, there's some performance and stability issues. There was one bug I ran into on BioShock 2 where I was fighting a big daddy, and it rushed me and melee attacked me just as I killed it, and that locked me in place for some reason, and I had to get killed in order to respawn and get movement back.
And you just toss a grenade at your feet?
Yeah, I mean, but that's like the one thing I've run into. Otherwise, it's been a very fun re-exploration of the series. My wife told me that she had never heard anything about it, and
really?
I'm not going to tell her. Yeah, she has no idea what's going on in there. She has no idea about like the reveals. So we're going to have fun with that. I'm not going to tell. I haven't told her anything.
Would you kindly not spoil the game?
Yeah, it's going to be really, really fun. That's like bizarre that you come across someone nowadays that like has any idea about games but doesn't know about that.
You know what? Did you hear the secret about Revan? Anyways. You know, I remember when I first played the game, when it was first released, my cousin thought that the opening scene was an entire cutscene. He didn't know that I was actually playing, swimming around in the water and getting to the lighthouse. He thought it was a cutscene.
Oh yeah, it's very cinematic. It's like really cool the way they set up like the fire on the water and the plane sinking slowly into it. It's incredible. It's pretty incredible. And the way they've worked with the visuals, it's a little bit, like, I wouldn't say it's astounding, but it's certainly a jump up from what it was.
Anyway, so we're going to move on to gaming news. The first item is, Miyazaki gives clear answers on the future of Dark Souls and Armored Core. And this comes to us from Kotaku. During a recent roundtable at Namco Bandai headquarters in Tokyo, Kotaku asked, From Software's Hidetaka Miyazaki about the future of Dark Souls, as well as what else the studio is working on. The good news is, yes, a new Armored Core is coming. The bad news is that, at least for the foreseeable future, more Dark Souls is not, at least not from Miyazaki himself. According to the developer, for me, Dark Souls 3 is the end. But it doesn't mean the end for Dark Souls. If someone other than myself, like another staff member, wants to make a Dark Souls, then I won't want to deny others from making the future installments. Part of the reason he felt this way, Miyazaki continues, is because the people who like Dark Souls there are people who like Dark Souls very much, and he doesn't want to unilaterally end the series. I am also not saying we should steer clear of making more dark fantasy games, he added. I'm not ruling that out. Now, this is not a secret that they're not making any more Dark Souls games, because, you know, this was like a couple of months ago that they declared Dark Souls 3 is it. That's it. No more. You know, and I think it takes people some... Like, I wonder how many people, after they saw Star Trek VI, thought it was really the last adventure of the old crew, until a couple of years later they realized, oh, wait, that really was the last voyage of that crew.
Yeah, well, when something's popular like this, there's always, like, a whole bunch of people, myself included sometimes, there's like, oh, yeah, sure, the end, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, sure. Until you need more money. but I mean, it's interesting to think that Miyazaki is willingly saying that if somebody wants to do it, they can. Especially since Dark Souls 2 happened and people didn't like that one as much.
I think it's nice that he's just moving on to a new project without just, you know, killing off whatever, I don't know, killing off the series and just leaving it open for other people to come in and develop for it if they want to.
Yeah, I think they might do is at some point in the future, like 2 or 3 years from now, they'll basically do a reboot of Dark Souls rather than continuing the story and just have an updated version with more bells and whistles and maybe a few more, you know, combat moves that you can do. But basically just restarting the series from scratch and, you know, perhaps trying to make a better story in which all three games, the story wasn't exactly the most complicated in the world. You know,
the story wasn't really the point of that game.
Yeah, that's the point, though. I mean, a little more emotional investment might make a game that a lot of people think is great even better.
Yeah, I've always had a problem with the whole story thing with them, because, like, they said a lot of people will say the story's not important, but the lore is all there, and then there's all the people that are just like, of course it's important. It's all over the place. You just have to see it. And I'm like, I don't want to. Unless it's actually going to tell me what it's trying to say, I don't feel like just staring at the environment and figuring it out.
You know, as great as people love Doom, it really never took off between 2 and 3 until they started having to try and figure out a story for it. You know, why is this soldier battling the demons from hell? You know? And it was a concept game in Doom 1 and 2... in which basically it was just showing off the pseudo 3D engine and basically, you know, introducing something new, but people quickly got bored of that, you know, because they say, okay, we're shooting, running around shooting. I mean, even Serious Sam had a better story than that.
Yeah. But I am excited for a return to the Armored Core series. It's been a while, hasn't it? It's 2013, right?
Scott, did you play Armored Core?
No, I have not. I have never heard of it.
Really? You've never heard of Armored Core?
Nope. The tank game?
Sort of. It's a mech game.
A mechanical Gyver.
Yeah. You basically build your mech from the ground up with all sorts of different customizable parts, and it was really, really fun as they just got more and more creative with what you could do with it. Further into the series.
Yeah, I started on the PS1. Started on the PS1 way back in the late 90s.
Yeah, it was one of the very early PS1 games.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, this sort of tells me that he's sort of burned out, because if you're going to go from dark fantasy, you're going to go into the future and make, you know, some mech games, you know, you can't really get much different than that.
Yeah, I can see that. But I mean, the fan base of Dark Souls, they're fervent, and I can imagine that to a certain extent they're hard to please.
I wonder, you know, I'm pretty sure, of course, that the PC version of Dark Souls 3 is just going to keep on getting more and more user-created content, you know, and basically that'll be the way that it's preserved.
I can imagine that, yeah. Do they do mods for Dark Souls 3?
There's mods for every single PC game there, you know. I'm pretty sure if you go to one of the mod page, I forgot the name of the mod page, but there's probably plenty of mods. All you have to do is do a search. Yeah, the Nexus mods. They have plenty of Dark Souls 3 things.
Hmm.
So,
that's interesting. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, anyway, why don't you take the next item, TJ?
Sure. Sony exec criticizes Hello Games marketing for No Man's Sky from Polygon. The narrative around No Man's Sky has solidified in the 5 weeks since its release. Many players believe that they were misled by the marketing for the game. That developer Hello Games promised more than it delivered with the open-ended space exploration and survival game.
Oh boy, yeah.
Shuhei Yoshida, president of Sony's Worldwide Studios, said in an interview with Eurogamer that while he really enjoyed what he's played of No Man's Sky, he feels for those players. Quote, I understand some of the criticisms, especially Sean Murray is giving, because he sounded like he was promising more features in the game from day one. It wasn't a great PR strategy, Yoshida told Eurogamer, referring to Hello Games studio head Sean Murray.
Yeah, I'm going to cut that out because that's just a repeating of the same thing. Just keep going.
Yoshida believes that the developer's promotional plan for the game didn't serve them well because of the incredible, unsustainable amount of hype that it built up. Yoshida blamed the situation on Hello Games being an indie team that didn't know how to market its game appropriately and should have had a public relations apparatus on hand for guidance. Of course, Sony did its fair share of hyping up No Man's Sky, giving the game prime placement at multiple PlayStation Experience conventions and E3s. The company marketed No Man's Sky as if it were a first-party PlayStation 4 title, even though it only published the disc-based PS4 version. Hello Games developed and published the digital versions for PS4 and Windows PC.
Okay, you know what? First, I'm going to slap Yoshida in the face, because here's the thing. Yeah, Sean Murray, what's it called, kept on hinting. He did it on late-night talk shows. Was it Jimmy Fallon? No, it was, Colbert, right? He went on Colbert, and he basically said, yeah, you can play with other people, you know?
Yeah.
And he kept on saying it. He did it in such a coy way, like, oh yeah, you probably, oh, and by the way, it is when, you know, and then he said, there's a very infinitesimal chance that you'll meet other players while you're exploring this huge, huge galaxy. So yeah, Sean Murray basically lied, or at least he Peter Molyneux'd it, except Peter Molyneux knew when he had to drop features, he would say, oh, I had to drop this feature, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But Sony wrapped the PlayStation 4 around it and gave it a hug and heavily hyped the game, far more than Hello Games. As a matter of fact, I'm gonna tell you, Sony's hyping made Sean Murray more likely to hype. You know,
yeah.
And you know, I remember the first time they showed at E3, they showed this incredible demo. The next E3, they showed the same demo, which was sort of like a warning sign to me. Like, okay, what's new? Oh, there's nothing new, which means you're doing the same vertical slice again.
Yeah, and, I mean, you had the lead-up to the game they weren't going to send out review copies, the game that we saw right before release wasn't the same as the day one release.
No.
And like, the worst thing of all this is, and the backlash of it, Hello Games and Sean Murray have been radio silent since August 18th. Like, and that is bizarre.
Well, I mean, if they're trying to heavily fix the game, then go ahead and go back into the crunch and try and, you know, get a patch that makes it fun.
Right, but the difference between that and, like, what normal companies do is that they are patching the game, but they're not even posting patch notes on Steam or PlayStation Network. They've released two full-scale patches since the game's release, and neither of them have patch notes, so people have no idea what's fixed, what's not fixed, and they're not saying anything about it, which is, it's odd. It's out of the ordinary, to say the least. Even if you're working hard on it, it's weird that a company doesn't at least, like, maybe go on Twitter or go on Or just type up some patch notes really quick, copy and paste it, and slap it up there really quick so people have an idea of what they're looking at.
Well, you know, they have...
Go ahead. Sounds like there's really bad communication going on here, and Sean Murray may have said things that he shouldn't have or not have been clear in his words and has led people to be confused about what his game was supposed to be.
I think you cannot underestimate the fact that the game was $60. That was not a retail game. Not even close. Had they released it for $20, it would have been a fun little, a space exploration app. You know, I mean, I love FTL, but I'm not going to spend $60 on it.
Yeah. I think, to a certain extent, too, I mean...
Especially for a PC game, by the way.
There are much, much worse games out there than No Man's Sky. And even those games, somebody comes around once in a blue moon, probably around patch time, and tells you what's going on with the game. Especially when there are people that are still playing this or formulating their own theories as to what's going on. You gotta do some damage control at some point.
Oh, well, you know that PC players have completely stopped playing it. You know that, right? The according to Steam, the number of people playing No Man's Sky after a week just dropped severely. They just said, okay, we're done. That's it. You know?
I really hope it's not a let's take the money and run, like, just separate from the project entirely.
And the thing is, you know what they're really doing is that this is going to be out on the Xbox One next year, and they're making sure that whatever they release, whatever their No Man's Sky special edition is going to be, they need to make it so that people want to buy it. You know? I mean, look at The Witness. It just came out yesterday on Xbox One. I'm still wondering if I should pick it up. It's like $13 right now.
It's pretty good. Short experience, but really good.
Really? The Witness was like, people were spending days, you know, having to unlock different parts of the puzzles, you know?
Wait, I'm trying to think.
The Witness. Okay. It's Jonathan Blow's game.
Okay, yeah, that one takes a while. I was thinking of the other one where you're a camp ranger and...
Oh, I forgot. But I know that Dear Esther just came out on Xbox One, too, which is interesting. And, all these exclusives are starting to pop up on other consoles. You know, I mean, Dear Esther was a PS4 PC exclusive, well, sort of, kind of. And, of course, The Witness was famously a PS4 console exclusive. You know, and so, it's interesting. And I'm trying to remember the game you just mentioned. I know the one you're talking about. It's one of those walk-around exploration games. And you find out the main character, who's a lumberjack, not a lumberjack, but he looks like a lumberjack. And he also gets naked.
Firewatch.
Firewatch, right. Man, Rich Evans did not like that game.
But okay. There's plenty of people that do.
Here's the thing about No Man's Sky. What they could have done was make it sort of more meditative, because basically that the game tends to be a zone-out game in which you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again. If they made it more meditative, I think it would have been a lot more popular, because I'm thinking of... what was that name of that game for the PS4 that was... walking around in the desert.
Journey,
right. You could have made it like Journey, and Journey was boring as hell now if you try and play it, because there's no one else out there.
I don't think it was boring, but that's me. I like it.
I know, but I'm just, I'm not saying it's boring. I'm saying it was repetitive. You know, now it's boring because the entire point of Journey was meeting up with other people, you know, and communicating with them.
Well, do you guys remember my rant on No Man's Sky? I liked the idea of it as a meditative game, but game fucking reminds you all the time that you're playing a game.
Oh, yeah, with the interruption. Oh, you made 10,000 steps!
Credits received. Credits received. Life support running low. Credits received. Life support. Shut up!
You know, you know what? No Man's Sky actually is making me want to buy a different game that just was recently on Xbox One, and that's Elite Dangerous. Because in that game, you do everything that you do in No Man's Sky, except there's a game there, and you know, you get rewarded for exploration. Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, I might want to try that. I might want to try Elite Dangerous now with the Horizon pack, because they now have the entire pack, everything on Xbox One. And the reason I'm not getting on PC is because my computer is getting old and I don't trust any games on it. So.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I've heard people have been hyping up Star Citizen 2 in hopes that that'll be the one. I don't know.
Star Citizen 2 looks really good in terms of technical, and but Elite Dangerous is here now. Oh, well, you know the interesting thing is that the guy who was making Star Citizen like a year ago or maybe 2 years ago urged all of the Star Citizen fans to play Elite Dangerous, and the guy who made Elite Dangerous urged everybody to get behind Star Citizen. So it's, you know, and there's a mutual beneficial there, because the more people, the more space exploration games there are, the more, you know, the more popular they become. And wisely, those two guys understand that if you generate interest in both games, it helps both of them. You know, they're not exact, they don't have to be competitors.
Yeah.
Especially since they're both sort of different. I mean, Star Citizen is going to play up the combat, whilst Elite Dangerous is more about the freedom of doing what you want, being a traitor, being a pirate, being a you know, bounty hunter, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So if you really want some fun, there's a video of Ben Croshaw, a.k.a. Yahtzee, playing Elite Dangerous. Not his review of Elite Dangerous, but him playing it. And always encountering these barrels of toxic waste floating around in outer space. You know, and they're always different. First it's toxic waste, then it's nuclear waste, then it's biohazard stuff, you know.
I would hope that eventually you run into the trash ball from Futurama.
And oh, well, here's the thing, is that when they found gold, he decided to pick it up, and then he got immediately shot down by a bunch of people. So yeah, that, see, stuff like that makes me want to play Elite Dangerous, just because, you know, the galaxy is huge, and yeah, I want to visit Wolf 439 and see where, you know, the Borg invaded. So anyways, we're gonna move on to the next time. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, Blizzard is moving away from the Battle.net name. This is from Destructoid. Nostalgia aside, the name Battle.net seemed much more sensible in the mid to late 90s, back to when Diablo and StarCraft were Blizzard's latest and greatest. The online gaming service has come a long way since then, but the name, an undeniable product of its time, has essentially gone unaltered. Nearly two decades later, Blizzard says it plans to get away from calling Battle.net the central nervous system for its games. By that name, the technology itself won't be changing or going away, but the company will begin referring to it as Blizzard Tech instead. You've already seen this recently with things like Blizzard Streaming and Blizzard Voice, and more changes are on the way. What's the reasoning here? When we created Battle.net, the idea of including a tailored online gaming service together with your game was more of a novel concept, so we put a lot of focus on explaining what the service was and how it worked, including giving it a distinct name. Over time, though, we've seen that there's been occasional confusion and inefficiencies related to having two separate identities under which everything falls, Blizzard and Battle.net. Given that built-in multiplayer support is a well-understood concept and more of a normal expectation these days, there isn't much of a need to maintain a separate identity for what is essentially our networking technology. And I don't think there's any point to this, but if they feel like it, it makes them better, because I think people that are still using it are probably going to call it Battle.net, but
yeah.
I guess if they, you know, want to try to rebrand it.
I'm still nostalgic, though, for stuff like...
Yeah.
Does anybody remember TEN, the Total Entertainment Network, TEN? You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, and when GameSpy was... The reason why it was called GameSpy wasn't because it was a website for reviews and stuff, but it was actually a service like Battle.net. It was supposed to allow people... You know, it was a multiplayer thing, you know.
I never used GameSpy.
Well, some games required GameSpy. And if you wanted to play Halo 1 back in the day, you needed GameSpy Tunnel.
I remember playing Call of Duty Allied Assault back in the day on GameSpy.
Yeah. I mean,
that's where a lot of the good servers were.
I mean, you know what? To hell with him. I'm still going to call it Battle.net. I don't care. He can't take that away from me. You know? It's Battle.net. Are they going to change the website to something else? If I look up Battle.net, I think you're still going to, or am I going to get...
They're going to call it Blizzard Tech, is what they said, so... But
no, I mean, if I go to Battle.net, you know, I go to US Battle.net. I mean, it's still a website.
Yeah. I don't know where these confusions or efficiencies came from having it called that. It's just weird.
I don't understand why you need to change the name, either. It's probably a sound name. I mean, you are battling other people.
Yeah.
I don't know, but like I said, this story's just made me a little nostalgic for the old days when I try it, when it was hell just getting a Duke Nukem 3D deathmatch going.
Yeah.
So, and you had to do all the COM ports and stuff like that. But, you know, they stopped VCR production a couple of months ago. It's the end of an era, folks.
Oh my goodness.
Yep. Yeah, so anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Pokemon Chief says Nintendo's NX is both handheld and console. This comes to us from Engadget. The head of the Pokemon company has let slip that his outfit is working on a pocketable monster title for Nintendo's NX. Given that TPC is part-owned by the Japanese gaming giant, he's probably seen the new handheld slash console slash tablet hybrid up close and personal. The Wall Street Journal quotes Shinzo Ishihara as saying that the, quote-unquote, the NX is trying to change the concept of what it means to be a home console device or a handheld device. Oh, God, just give me a barf bag. At that line. At this point, it looks like the device will be some sort of handheld device that has a TV component or the other way around. Sort of like the Shield by NVIDIA. You know, the NVIDIA is a controller, but does it stream to your PC or something like that? Anyway, Ishihara declined to mention anything about the Nintendo NX or when Pokemon NX would land. He did mention, however, that Pokemon Go has sent sales of related titles and merchandise through the roof. No kidding. In addition, plans are underway to bring Go to China and South Korea, where mapping still needs to be enhanced. Oh, God, will they allow that in China?
Oh, my gosh, that would be a problem.
Oh, dear.
That'd be very interesting.
They better make sure
that is too loud.
They better make sure no gyms are at the Chinese security offices or police stations or military. That'd be kind of awkward.
Anyone caught playing Pokemon Go will be shot on sight.
Well, that's the policy in the U.S. right now, so. I think that's a new law in Texas.
Oh, jeez.
So, the thing is that I'm still pretty sure it's going to be a cell phone that does a little bit more with a TV out, you know? I mean, they're using cell phone technology, which is pretty advanced. I mean, you know, at this point, a lot of cell phone games look really damn good, you know? And they say it's not replacing the Wii U and it's not replacing the 3DS. The only thing is, question is, will we be able to make phone calls on it?
Yeah. It's hard to imagine. Until they finally show this thing off, I can't even begin to imagine, like, what it's going to look like. It's an oddity, because it's supposed to be able to play, like, Zelda Breath of the Wild, but it's not going to replace the Wii U. So, like, what is it? What are we looking at here?
They say it's working on a Tegra chip, and I'm pretty sure it's going to have to be the most advanced Tegra chip there is. You know?
Hmm.
How about you, Scott?
Yeah, they need to show us a little bit more for us, because, you know, I'm not sure I trust them, you know, to want to get this product when they don't even know, you know, it's like what he's saying. It's not going to replace the console or the, you know, the handheld 3DS or the Wii U, so it's, you know, exactly what he said. It's like, what is it then? Because I've seen pictures of what I guess people thought it was going to look like, and I've seen weird stuff that does not look appealing. So I have no idea either, and I don't know if I really trust Nintendo.
And
I'm starting to wonder if the core concept behind Nintendo's marketing is that the mystery of what's in the box is more important than what's actually in the box.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, is that the Tokyo Game Show just stopped. It just ended. So Nintendo had a chance to show off this thing at TGS, and they didn't. You know? What's the next big show? Is Gamescom? Or is Gamescom already over?
I think Gamescom...
Because Tokyo Game Show, if they're going to show off the NX, that was when they were going to show it off, you know, if they were going to show it off at all. So it's frustrating. And, you know, I mean, if this is a way of doing hype, it's often very effective. And, yeah, Gamescom was back in August, so that's done too.
Yeah.
I don't know. And here's the thing is, how much is it going to cost?
I'm thinking $250 most. That's got to be, like, the most I think it's going to cost, right?
Could be. I mean, depends. See, cell phones cost $600 to $900, depending on what kind you're... I mean, smartphones, really. $500 to $900, depending.
I guess this is their way of making a mobile console, you know, not a 3DS console, but...
But here's the thing, you know, that's what the Vita was. The Vita was a mobile console, and no one bought it because in the end, you're not going to want to tote around a console everywhere or play console-style games, you know? If you're going to play a handheld console, you're going to play handheld console-type games like Tetris or Pokemon or anything that's quickly consumable, you know? Mm-hmm. TJ may say, well, I'd love to play Dark Souls 3 on a handheld, but you know what? You wouldn't. Because you don't have the time to invest in it. You don't have the time to invest in it when you're on the train or the bus or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's definitely more of a thing where I bust out something that I can play for a second and then put away really quickly. I really stay away from, like, console experiences on the 3DS. It's why I haven't gone after the Zelda games. It's why I haven't gone after Monster Hunter. It's just, I don't have time to do that.
Well, unless Zelda games you can usually put away pretty quickly. It's save and quit. You know, you hit start, save, quit.
Yeah, but something like Monster Hunter requires an investment of time. Even if you can save and quit, the thing is that you forget quickly, oh, wait, you come back 10 minutes later, oh, wait, was I supposed to go here in the water? Or was, you know, you have to think hard with something like Monster Hunter, right? While Super Mario World, I'm on World 1-5, fine, I got it. Just go there, you know? Or Tetris, you know? Tetris is just, I don't know.
One of the best things they ever put on the 3DS was a save state set up on the virtual console so that you can just, like, crack a save whenever you feel like it and then go back to it. And that makes those Super Nintendo and Nintendo games much more easily accessible.
So the question is, what kind of games are going to have on the NX? Because here's the thing, if you're having Pokemon Go on the NX, that sort of indicates a very handheld-ish type of game. Right? Of course, it's a mobile phone, but you know what I mean. I mean, Pokemon Go is an example of a game that's easily consumable. You pop it out, you look for a Pokemon near me, you walk towards it, and you try to capture it. Boom, that's it. You know? It's even less involving than Pokemon, which is a good handheld game. You know?
Yeah.
So, at least we know it's running the gamut, though. If it's going to play the new Zelda game, and then it's going to play the Pokemon Go game, which isn't exactly the most demanding game in the world, then you have this wide range. Scott?
Yes?
No, just contribute. I'm just a... Don't make me edit this.
Yeah. Pokemon stuff is not all that interesting to me, I guess, but...
Well, Rich, the Pokemon Go or regular Pokemon?
You know, I don't see the need for it. I don't know if I'm going to be getting it. If I could just play their console game on the main console and play the 3DS games on the 3DS.
Mm.
Not really a mobile game player. I mean, I find the 3DS very easily accessible. I find it easy to close it, put it away, and then go back to it later. And there are good RPG games on there.
You know, I keep on meaning to buy a 3DS. Oh, which reminds me, I broke down and I bought an Elite controller.
Oh, yeah? How is it?
Oh, it's nice. It's very heavy. I popped out the fighting game D-pad and put in the regular D-pad. And it was really easy, too. It's just like little magnets in there. I mean, I could pop out these, a lot of stuff on it, you know. What I like is it's heavy. Well, it's not heavy, but it's heavy. It feels weight. The grip is nice. And, Yeah, I mean, I mean, I have a little bit of buyer's remorse because, you know, I bought it on sale, but it's still a chunk of change, you know.
That being able to pop out the controller, the controls too, and customize them. It's not like a cheap thing, is it? It's not like plasticky feeling where you just.
Oh no, this is very This is like, you know, a lot of people accuse Microsoft of copying a different controller software manufacturer. I forgot which one, who does elite stuff like this. And actually, their stuff is more expensive, but the same quality. You know, so the thing is that also the thumbsticks on my Xbox One controllers keep, you know, I wouldn't say breaking, but keep misaligning. Mm-hmm. So I figure that if I get an Elite, I won't have that problem. I hope I don't. But this does mean that there's no way I'm going to be getting the Xbox S now, Xbox One S.
Yeah.
I made my purchase.
$150, it better be the best controller you ever had.
Well, I spent $110 on it, so at least there's that.
Yeah,
I saved
that's
me.
Good.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, TJ.
From Donovan. My roommate has had the white PS4 that was bundled with Destiny. Cool, that's me too. I recall playing Dota when it was new in 2005, but I haven't played it in years because I dislike teammates feeding, that is, dying a lot, or being killed by multiple opponents because my teammates wouldn't declare missing an action, which is a big thing in League of Legends, heroes in their lanes. Regarding why people in RTS and MOBA games click constantly might be to help their reaction time, as I too did that. It would let me know relative server latency. I never played League of Legends, Heart of the Swarm, or Dota 2, but I have spectated Dota 2 to see my PC's performance and Dota 2 got a Vulcan update. So I'm hoping that for the next Half-Life, Left 4 Dead, Counter-Strike, or Valve game to get a good Vulcan implementation. I enjoy watching Super Mario Maker, retro category games, nostalgic games, and high requirement games because I'm using an old PC until Zen arrives. And I too use Twitch to preview games. It also serves as background noise. Yeah, I actually never thought of that about the server latency. I'm the type to I hate having the like. There's an option on a lot of MOBA games to have the camera locked on your character, and I hate doing that because I like to be able to freely move my camera around the map and see what's going on in other lanes and see what's going on with my teammates. But I can see why you would want to see, like, the reaction times you're getting.
Go on. Go on.
As for the Twitch, yeah, I think that watching some of the older games is really enjoyable, especially ones that are, when somebody has a retro game that's hard to find, it's really enjoyable to be able to see that without, like, having to go online and get legal means.
I watch a Twitch of games that are just released, the indie games that are just released, just to see people playing them and talking about them as they do it. It's a nice way to preview it and maybe get excited. I remember this one game, I forgot the name of it, in which you start off as a single pixel, and as you keep on going, you get more and more, you know, more and more well-formed as you advance. It was an interesting game, I didn't get it, but, you know. Anyway, he also says, I watch StarCraft 2 and other RTS games because I'm no longer good at them. Anyway,
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, so the question of the week is, what is or what was your favorite handheld console game? And we don't mean MOBA, we mean handheld console game. So we're going to start with you, Scott.
Mine would be the Professor Layton games. They were really great. I loved doing the puzzles, and like I said, it was easy just to put it down if I had to go do something else.
Did you play the crossover with Phoenix Ace Attorney?
No, I have not played that.
Okay. How about you, TJ?
God, I've played a lot of them. I'm trying to think, like, what stands out. Let me think. Fire Emblem is pretty damn good. Like, especially the new ones that have come out. I know. Advance Wars.
Advance Wars. I have to pick something different now.
You were going to say Advance Wars?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good. Especially, like, The first ones on the Game Boy Advance were kind of cartoony, and that was enjoyable, but the one they eventually put one out on the DS, and that was, I think, the last one that launched, Days of Ruin, and that one was dark as hell.
Yeah.
Like, the world is destroyed, and people are being killed from the inside out by plant spores.
Ew.
Yeah, that it had a really dark story, but it was also just a really, really enjoyable story and game.
Yeah. As for me, I'm going to go the obvious route, and I'm going to say Super Mario Bros. 3 Advance. It's called Super Mario Bros. 4 Advance, but it's Super Mario 3 on your DS. And, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, there's something great about, you know, just playing good old Super Mario Bros. In your hand. I also played a lot of Mario Brothers, which is on the same cart. And people forget about Mario Brothers, which is basically they're guys in pipes and they're knocking the pipes to turn crabs and turtles on their backs to kick them off. Yeah.
I will say this: Advance Wars Days of Ruin, also one of the best soundtracks ever on a mobile game, and perhaps one of my favorite soundtracks of any game. Mm. It's really, really, like, heavy rock-based, and it's perfect for, like, a high, when you want a high-octane adrenaline feel when you're playing something. I put it on when I play League of Legends sometimes.
Mm. I will also say, I would have said Dragon Quest IX, but I never completed it.
Yeah, I didn't finish that one either. I thought it was a little bit too cheesy with the puns.
Well, I liked the story, but I just didn't have the time to complete it, and I never got to complete it. Oh, I will say that it's actually also right there is Big Brain Academy. I liked it a lot better than Brain Age. A lot better. Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, send us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chodes.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take it easy.
Okay, that's it. Everybody can cut. Bye-bye. Oh, where's my... Oh, there it is. Quit Skype.